to recognize Faith Kennedy and Heather Hogan, and where did he go?
Terry
Pond.
Disappeared.
He said something about chocolate.
Okay, all right. I went to introduce you, Terry, and there you were gone. So with that, we're almost complete. We have one more member to be named. Also joining us this evening, we have three directors. We have Jason Humphrey, we have Sean Tracy, and we have Rick Demings. And I'm going to let David give you a couple of words about Jason's new position with us.
Right. So Jason is new to Anglophone West, actually effective Monday, October 31st, and joins us on a two-year secondment in the position of Director of Communications, who will also oversee the Right to Information and Protection of Privacy portfolio. So Jason comes with a great deal of expertise in communications, has worked in government for quite some time, and most recently in the Executive Council office. But the best part about Jason is he has a really, really good understanding of Part 2 government, which is the school system, not so much government, but the school system government. So he's a secondment for 2 years to help us in that particular area. So we welcome Jason. Of course, Rick Demings is the Director of Schools for the Oromocto Center, and has been around for a long time. And Sean Tracy is the Director of Finance and Administration, and a common visitor to our DEC meetings.
Thank you. You have the agenda. I would like to add an item under correspondence, and that's a request for someone to serve on a board. Are there any other additions at this time for the agenda? Seeing none, approval by consent then. And you have had a chance to look at the minutes from the September 22nd public meeting. Are there any errors or omissions to note at this time? Seeing none, approve those by consent as well. So, if you didn't read them, it was your fault. Moving into business arising from the minutes. Our first item is the Fredericton Southside Schools report, the Eastern Young report that we had presented on Monday of this week.
So, just an opportunity for us to touch on that report, and most of us were there on Monday night when Ernst & Young gave their report, and in a public format. This was a report that was commissioned to study the demographics of the Southside schools within the city of Fredericton. The report came back with a series of recommendations. Perhaps the most notable recommendation was the building of a K-8 school in Hanwell, with the closure of Kingsclear Elementary, as well as the building of a new K-5 school in Skyline Acres with the closing of Forest Hill Elementary and Liverpool Street Elementary. Other recommendations included reconfiguring the grade levels in the catchment area of Montgomery and Connaught so that those two schools served the same catchment area, but Montgomery would be home to students in grades kindergarten to 2, and Connaught would be home to students of grades 3 to 5. And also the final recommendation would be to not let too much time go by without examining enrollment data in a few years' time for consideration of the potential for a third school on Fredericton's south side. So though I'm just going from memory, so those are recommendations that came from the report. I thought it might be worth to have on the agenda tonight to see if there were any questions or any conversations. And obviously, it's a report that that we'll have to take into account and think about and reflect upon and spend some time talking about. And I guess it offers some very interesting information.
Stephanie.
Madam Chair, I would like to make a motion to, whereas the Ernst & Young report mentioned the need for a new school, and it sounds like they'd rather it was sooner rather than later, I motion to update the multi-year school infrastructure list to have a new school built in Hanwell based on Section 6.2 of Policy 409. This should include accelerating the results of the Hanwell study from the 2007-18 major capital list into an amended 2016-17 major capital list, and have it be placed at the same priority as the skilled trade addition that was mentioned, motioned, and passed for Leo Hayes High School.
You've heard the motion. Do we have a seconder? Seconded by Mark. Discussion.
I guess just to clarify, hearing this motion for the first time, which I like the idea of the fact that obviously Leo Hayes was our number one priority, and it's there, and this seems to be going to be placed equal to that. I guess the biggest question is, the department would have this Ernst & Young report, correct?
Correct.
So what are their feelings now? Are they like, no, we have to wait? Because typically, we would add to the, we would have a new list in May. I mean, I think it's a great idea if the department is willing for us to basically add a late submission, because it could potentially save a whole year, and we know there's going to be at least 2 years, you know, to get everything off the ground, and I think this will affect all our schools. I think it's a desperate need. So is this even a possibility? I think we should still put it to the department, but is it a remote possibility that the department would even accept a late submission, if you will?
So the timeline is that we submit a major capital construction priority list in May for consideration by government, and then government, our Department of Education will do some work in over the summer and in the fall, and we'll make presentations to, and we'll work with DTI, and Sean, you make sure you jump in if I'm not describing this right, make presentations to DTI, and then eventually work with DTI, and then eventually use the quadruple bottom line matrix to rate all of the priorities that have been submitted by district education councils. Then with that information and those ratings, presentations are made to government, to the board of management perhaps, and Jason, you know some of this too, so you feel free to jump in, and the decision makers of our province, you know, the MLAs and cabinet, and usually sometime, we've seen it as early as December, and we've seen it as late as February, there are announcements made of not only the capital improvement projects, but also major capital construction projects that will move forward. So we submitted Leo Hayes as a number one priority. We submitted as our number two priority the concept of Hanwell through this Southside study. So they know it's of interest to us. The third priority was the expansion of Connaught Street Elementary. And then the fourth, fifth, and sixth were midlife upgrades to three of our larger high schools. So the department would have taken all of those projects, would have dumped them all into the quadruple bottom line matrix formula, and would have scored them and presented to government. I think my guess is that government would welcome your your statement or confirmation that you want to move forward with this, because potentially they could look at some of those beginning steps. Because usually the first, you know, it's not all that often that right off the bat it's you know, the announcement of a new school. Where did we see it? You know, if you look at Bath, for instance, as an example, it was like 3 years. There was the design and there was the analysis, and I forget the orders, but there's a process to it. So all of that to say, Mark, I'm sure that the department would be very interested in knowing as quickly as possible what the desires are of council, whether or not they would be able to make an announcement or make a conclusion at this time, I just can't confirm.
Okay,
Sean, how would you have said that any differently? Or
no, you covered it.
Jason?
That's correct.
Okay.
So other than not being able to sound like a superhero with the capital quadruple bottom line matrix, I'm going to speak in favor of the Leo Hayes situation. I don't not support the motion to build to look at building a school on Hanwell. I do not support that. I do not support putting it at equal level with Leo Hayes. I would consider supporting a motion that that put it as a second priority. We've already completed the second priority of our list by having the study completed. We still have yet to hear whether the Leo Hayes major tech wing is going to happen. And to take the priority of that away after the support was 100% given from the last council would be unfair, I think, to the Leo Hayes population. It is as well a much needed, desperate situation to get that tech wing built. And if it wasn't, then the council would not have put it as number one on their priority list. So I guess in light of that, I would propose an amendment to the motion that said everything that Stephanie said, except making it, putting it at a number two priority at this point, if they would allow a late submission. So that would require a seconder and a vote before we go on to anything else.
Okay.
So you were seconding that? Yes.
Do you have the amendment, Carol and Andrew, seconded?
Yeah.
We just have clarity of where that would fit in the motion. I don't know. Does Carol have the motion down, or maybe someone could look at it and see?
Okay. You're asking
where that amendment would fit. It's somewhere where it said, you said make it equal to?
I yes, think it at would the end I've got, and have it be placed at the same priority as the skilled trades. So you want that?
So you're saying have it placed as number one to number two priority?
Yes.
Without
before Bath.
Just
yes.
Before we debate it, I'd like to know and just have
no.
It.
No.
Bath isn't on the list.
Bath
okay, that's on the other
no,
side.
No, this is before Connaught.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're asking that I amend?
Well, she's making a motion. I just want to make sure where it's going to fit in that motion.
That's where it's going to fit.
Do we have any comments on the amendment? Yes, Heather.
And more vote procedure. So if the DEC decided to go with the amendment and saying that it would be second after Leo Hayes, when that goes to the province, do they look at that as our second proposal or?
That's right.
Okay. They would look at that as us supporting the Hanwell situation,
mm-hmm.
But
correct.
not taking away from our previous submission of our number one priority of Leo Hayes.
They will acknowledge council support, as Jane mentioned. They'll still take the information and throw it into the quadruple bottom line matrix hopper and get a number, get a rating, and present to cabinet, present to government, if there's still time, and then decisions will be made. And
but it shouldn't affect our number one priority.
It shouldn't affect the number one priority in that it's declared the number one priority. But we can't lose sight of the fact that government may say, okay, Leo Hayes is your number one, Hanwell is your number two, and Connaught's your number three. But when we put all the information in, the best rating is Connaught. And we're going to give you that this year. So we don't have control on that. The control that we have, the control that you as a council have, is to make the priorities known. And it seems... and it seems now that you have that on the table to decide upon.
Mark.
As far as the amendment, I'm not necessarily opposed to it. I haven't seen the department in my history fund a number two without funding a number one. That's been my experience. You know, I think there is a slight disadvantage to having one and two versus one and one, although I do respect the past decision to keep Leo Hayes number one. The advantage having both number one, in my opinion, is you have, they're both backed up by solid studies, they're both needed, and if the department took the approach that it wouldn't be fair to fund number two until we fund number one, they could do one of two things. A, not fund either, or B, fund both. If you have them both number one, it kind of... to me, it almost doubles our chances of getting money. You know, I'm a little conflicted because we did make the decision for Leo Hayes, so, and I think it is a priority. I just think not every district is guaranteed to get capital money every year, so I look at it, what's our best way to get money? And so I guess I'm unsure, but I see the point of the amendment.
So I'll call for the question on the amendment.
I'd like to address the topic just very briefly. I know I don't have a vote. I just want to say that the decision was made last year based on information that came out through the year and based on reasoning and rationale that was presented to the DEC from last year's members. I'm not sure that bringing this forward without bringing all of those reasons and rationale forward is a fair way to make that decision on ranking. So that's my comment. And I'm also worried about what happens once money is brought in and we're building new schools, what happens to the idea of putting a skilled trades wing, where that will fit. That's my comment. So, any further? You brought the question on the amendment. So voting on the amendment only, all in favor signify with aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary? Motion is passed. And now, any further comments on the motion itself?
I'll call for the question.
Wallace had the comment.
Oh, sorry.
A procedural thing, I guess. If we do put this motion through, does that mean we're also recommending that we're going to go through the 409 study on Keswick as part of the whole recommendation here?
No. All we're saying is that we would like to have a new school built in Hanwell. And were you referring to Kingsclear?
Yeah.
So that doesn't in any way commit us to a study of Kingsclear or
any of the other schools
or anything else.
Okay.
So we are saying that we would like to have a new school built in the Hanwell, regardless of what else we do, if we approve this motion.
And it would go forward to the government as a replacement of our second priority.
Right. Any further comments, questions? Heather?
I'm sorry, I'm not real clear. We made a motion and amended that motion to put it as a second priority. So the original motion is to build the school in Hamel.
As our second priority.
put it on.
That was, that original motion was to have it at the same
level.
That was amended.
And it's been amended.
So we're now voting on the amended motion.
We voted on the amended.
On the amendment.
On the amendment, oh yes.
Okay. I'm all right, Mark?
Yeah, it's going great.
Okay. No further comments? All in favor of the motion? Does anyone need it read again? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary minded? Thank you, motion is passed.
Run to the phone, quick.
This is for the rest of the meeting. You want to run around? There's still other things I want to hear.
You keep going, we will not feel bad.
He's been here so long, he knows all of our business. Next on the agenda is the PSSC orientation, so I'll ask Jane to report on the Fredericton area orientation.
Well, I will say that we had a fantastic evening. We had about 13 public members there, along with some deaf members, and Stacy and I kind of tag-teamed it, and I think we did a pretty awesome job, and we made sure there was nobody from the district there to criticize us, because we sent David home. And I think the people that were there, I would have to say that I received the best compliment ever after doing a presentation, after that presentation, when one of the young men in the audience came up to me and said, I want you to know that there was a lot of good information and I did not find it long.
Good.
And for me, that was like an awesome compliment. So that's how ours went.
And Andy,
we had our meeting this week at Carl North High School. There was not a large crowd, but we had some representation from several different schools, including Towick Valley, John Caldwell, Townsview, Patuxent-Keag, Florenceville Middle School, Florenceville or Bristol Elementary School, and maybe one other. And then there were two or three different administrators, principals in the room as well. So it was my first baptism by fire, and I didn't burn the house down, so we did all right.
Good. Thank you.
And actually, I'll add a comment to, because I've never heard it. Last night at the JC meeting, the girl that attended, Michelle Dixon, is the new chair there, and she was talking, and she said, if you don't speak, as I learned last night, that if you don't speak, you're considered as agreeing on anything we're talking about. So I thought, oh, she did learn something, so that's kudos to Andy.
And please make sure that the PSSCs you report to understand that if they aren't ready and weren't ready to attend the orientation, that we can do individual orientations for them if they need. I know a couple of mine are still looking for representatives.
A couple of mine, too, are still late, so maybe, I don't know, for next year we might want to make the orientation a little later. I don't know if that'll work.
We'll count on you to remember that.
Okay.
New business. We have as our topic. Oh, before I go there, I'm going to leave the order of business and recognize and thank Stacy Brown for being here with us tonight. She's our DEC manager with the Department of Education, or the EECD, and she's been a wonderful resource for us this year.
And most of you like me enough to come spend the weekend with me.
Yes.
You get prizes, don't you?
That's because I bribe you with candy.
I don't think that fits under the 7-Eleven.
Yeah. for modeling appropriate behavior.
Okay, so back to new business. The item is titled French Immersion, but the topic is about the return of the early French Immersion entry point to grade one. And I understand Jane has a motion for
I have an epiphany. An epistle, I guess you call it. So I'll just read the motion. Whereas in the recent 10-year education plan presented by government, It was indicated no new major changes would be introduced in order to allow teachers and districts an opportunity to work on and fully implement current programs. Whereas in the education system, we have been encouraged to base program decisions on reliable studies and data, and whereas the current grade 3 entry French immersion program has not been in place long enough to provide measurable graduation level results, whereas there have not been reliable studies or data on the success of the intensive post-intensive French program, either to equipping non-immersion students in the French language or in regards to addressing the streaming issue, whereas the education system in our province is failing to succeed in numeracy and literacy according to our district results, provincial results, and international results, and whereas resources are needed to address this, particularly at the kindergarten to grade 2 level where assessment results continue to drop, whereas while learning a second language is imperative, the introduction of another program at this time could seriously interfere with attempts to reduce the deficits in numeracy and literacy, resolve it that the Anglophone West District Education Council write to the Minister of Education, the Honourable Brian Kenny, and the Premier, the Honourable Brian Gallant, expressing disappointment with the recent announcement regarding a new entry point for French immersion in September 2017, reflecting the concerns detailed above and indicating that introducing grade 1 entry for French immersion at this time is not a sound educational decision. So I move that motion.
And the seconded by Sheila. Discussion. Mark.
I just want to say it is, I agree wholeheartedly with the motion, and it is unfortunate, yet again, that they're moving this entry point. There are two things that have always been of concern. Number one, French immersion is not available in every community. I know you can't have it in every school in the community, but it's not available in every community. And the government is simply playing politics. They're not really concerned about French, the ethnic language. Number two, as someone who has a child that went through high school, hard to believe, but grade 11 and 12 is very difficult. We were fortunate at OHS, but there's still not a lot of choices, and in some places it's even worse. And so they can change the entry point back and forth every 5 years if they want to. It's not going to solve the real problem. And obviously I support this motion, and I just wish they'd listen, but they're not. So anyway, it's my two cents.
And the other, yes, Heather.
It's just more of a grammatical thing. It's really not a new announcement. I mean, it was in the Premier's platform when he was running for election. So I'm just wondering if there's where you have the new announcement of moving the grade.
I guess it's based on the fact that they have just officially announced that it's going to happen.
And I like that.
Okay.
I like what you just said, as okay. opposed to, because it almost sounds like it's something that we didn't know
yeah.
about, but it's just that it's the official statement of the implementation in September. I like the way you just said it there.
So,
official second, announcement.
Would the seconder of that motion agree to having that change made?
I will.
New change to official. Is that all I need to do, Mark?
And that's the change in the motion, not in the preamble, correct?
Yes.
So now how it reads, Premier Grant, expressing disappointment with the recent announcement regarding, with the official announcement regarding the new entry point for French immersion in grade September. Yeah.
So the motion is that we write a letter.
And basically I'm just replacing the word recent with official. Yeah.
Is this only for the schools that have French immersion, or did I read it wrong and they said it would be available to all grade ones?
Well, it depends on whether they're getting elected this year or not.
And it depends on numbers in the school if they can offer it.
The promise was to make French immersion available to all students.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't, I don't believe that said in all schools.
So how do they pick and choose?
They just bus kids to other schools to have it offered.
I don't think they do where I live.
Not currently. No, that's what the mm-hmm. new...
There's a provincial policy that guides districts in determining where classes will be offered. And it's provincial policy 309, section 6.4. Wow. And it's it talks about the class size. It can be offered when the class size of a French immersion class would be of comparable size to the English class. So, for instance, if there was an interest of five kids for French immersion and the comparable English class size would be 20, then we wouldn't be able to offer it in that particular case. If there are 50 kids at grade 1 and 25 kids want French immersion and 25 kids want English, then they're of comparable class size. I use that as simplicity.
Or if there were 16 and 8 and 8, it's comparable.
Right.
Say that again?
If there were 16 grade 1s in a small school and you had 8 and 8, that would be comparable.
I don't think so.
Yes, I don't think
so.
That's just that.
And how many will they transport?
I don't know the answer to that. Yeah.
So if there was one child or two children, mm-hmm. would they transport them, let's say, from Jitland to Fredericton?
The
daily?
Details on how this will mm-hmm. be offered
yeah.
to all children or not.
Okay.
Yeah. I look forward to talking and learning more about that as time goes on, mm-hmm. Which I'm sure I will. The conversations have started now. Mm-hmm. We had a superintendent and directors meeting in Miramichi last week, and the conversations have started about what it will look like, and we're mobilizing now to get ready, but there's still more conversation to come.
For those that don't have it, this announcement really stirred people up.
Mm, I can imagine.
Because mm-hmm. everyone read their own.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We've seen that as the epiphany of French is coming.
I will say that in a conference call this week, I asked the Deputy Minister, John McLaughlin, if there was an anticipation that the change of the entry date would take resources away from the K-2 program that needs the extra resources as indicated by the assessment. And his response was, that is not expected. It is not expected that resources will be drained away for the new entry point. Just passing that word on for you. I told him I expected the question to come up at our meeting.
Can you repeat that again?
Probably not.
He does not expect that resources that should be used for the K-2 program in terms of improving our assessment results will be drained to reintroduce the grade 1 entry.
One more time, David?
No, I got it that time.
So, do we have any further? Yes, ma'am.
I have a couple of questions on the implementation, but it's not really related to the motion. I'm just wondering
so
if
we're
we can
waiting
have discussion after the
sure.
motion.
Sure, yeah. Any further comments on the motion? Seeing none, I ask for all in favor of this motion to say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary. Thank you. Motion is carried. And discussion on the implementation.
So how are they going to do it in terms of grade 3? Because if someone's in grade 2 now and they make the switch, they're going to miss French immersion. Are they going to run the grade 3 program?
Yes.
Until those kids go through?
Correct. So grade 3 will be offered. Grade 3 entry will be offered for 2 more years.
How does that work logistically, class-based teachers? Is that great?
We'll just do our
no
best
logic
to make it work.
It's a lot of work.
But
for
it
the
is
principal.
Work. It's
that's
you
it
got
to we
work
can't. Yes, we have to offer those students that are currently in grade 1 and currently in grade 2 an opportunity to enroll in an early entry program.
It'll take some effort.
Sure.
Yes, Heather.
Has there, at your meetings, were there any discussions about how we were going to find all of the teachers to teach French immersion?
We talked about it a little bit, yes. I think it starts with getting out of the gate early, making sure that we are able to put our thumb on the number of classes and teachers that are required. And we have a number of teachers within our province who are capable of taking on French immersion teaching assignments, which actually calls for a level of proficiency at the superior level. If we can't find them, then we broaden our look and broaden our search. And the districts and the department are committed to working together to conducting that search, though.
Any further questions for David at this time on implementation of French immersion?
Yes, I would. Yes. So should we say that we should start speaking to the parents in kindergarten and getting them ready, or do we just wait until the last minute?
Well, there's an annual process where we go out and describe the the French programs that are available across the board. Mm-hmm. We have information on our website. A parent can never start too early to start thinking about the path that they want their children to follow. And now they're forced to start thinking about it a little bit earlier. I'm the parent of a child who started grade 3 immersion in that very first class, and he's currently in grade 9. So we had a little bit of relief in that we didn't have to think about the grade 1, but as parents, I can still remember thinking about what is the path that we want to choose with respect to French immersion, and it's a family decision that that parents need to think through, and they can certainly ask questions. When I look at the programs available in our province, whether it's the intensive French program at the grade 5 level, or the grade 6 late immersion, or the grade 3 early immersion, they're all programs that offer an opportunity to students to further their ability to learn French as a second language. So every child in our province is going to have that opportunity to further their competency in French. It's up to parents, of course, to choose the path they want to take.
Okay. Sheila?
I'm thinking that after all this settles and principals have more information about this, I'm thinking that principals will have information sessions on this about questions as the grade 3.
Sure.
And
yeah we and they're actually they're district run sessions, and traditionally we run 2 or 3 across the district,
right,
in preparation, but
yes,
we'll probably expand that a little bit further.
Did I hear that there's also going to be in service for some teachers that are, this came from a government source, but
we expect that there'll be some specific training for new grade 1 French immersion teachers in preparation for next year. I don't know what it looks like or when it is exactly, but it would be our expectation that there'll be some initial training before this school year is over.
I'm talking about in service to increase proficiency.
Oh, allow them to, yes. Every year there's an opportunity for teachers to participate in coursework to increase their level of proficiency. Yeah, that will continue.
Okay, we can keep this on our radar and remember to add it to the agenda should you have questions in the future. So we're into our superintendent monitoring reports. The first one is the budgeting forecasting second quarter report. Oh, yes, we did.
We're doing okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
We didn't want to be a part of this. So
we tried to do it last night.
Yeah, you just blocked that.
Okay, let's call up our first one is EL4, Budgeting and Financing. And this is our first of four reports within the planning cycle. Of course, Sean, as the Director of Finance Administration, and Terry, as the Budgeting and Accounting Manager, have been very supportive in preparing this report. And as usual, I make all efforts we can with the support of Sean and his team to ensure that we don't go into deficit or we don't put our organization into any fiscal jeopardy. We monitor the budgets and expenses carefully as the year goes on, and as we get into this time of the year, it's sort of picked up another level in the monitoring and being very careful. We respect the obligation to keep capital improvement projects and major capital construction projects separate from the global budget as per the Education Act. We stay on our schedule of approving capital improvement priorities projects each May. It's worth noting that for those capital improvement projects, we approve a list in May, but between May and the approval date by government, sometimes it has to get tweaked a little bit based on emergencies that might arise or other priorities that creep up that were missed back in May when you had a look at the list. Usually it doesn't stray too far from the list that you approve. This year I think it was some roofs that showed up, wasn't it, Sean?
Roofs and one elevator.
And an elevator, right. So the district global budget was provided to the district by our department. You as a council approved it in August of 2016. You approved an expenditure plan. Since then, we've had some budget transfers that have now been received and uploaded into our system. So I always said our global budget is $209 million. Now I'm going to say it's $210 million, $210,600,000 actually. As of September 30th, 47.85% of that budget has been expended. Of course, the goal is to have 100% expended by March 31st, the end of the fiscal year. Our projections still show a plan for a balanced budget at the end of March. Sean and I continue to work together to ensure that the global budget is moving as it should. We also monitor the self-sustaining dollars very, very carefully. We've continued with our revenue sharing model so that schools can make use of self-sustaining dollars and carry money forward from fiscal year to fiscal year. So there are a couple of appendices here. First of all, the working document, the budget working document, the one that you're familiar with, and then of course the second quarter report, which I'll ask Sean to, do you want to do it from mine or from yours, Sean?
I prefer to do it from mine.
Okay.
Just because hopefully it works this time.
Your laptop probably smells like money, does it?
sell the big bucks in your
Snickers salad.
Good okay. One, Jane.
So, second quarter report, as David said, it's as of September 30th, all the expenses up until that point in time. We've received budget transfers. The most notable one is $1.651 million in funding for FTEs, teaching FTEs, and also FTE money for educational assistance. We're still presenting a balanced budget, and as for a normal cycle, our third quarter budget really is the one that really gives us the best indication of where we're heading. We have a chance to experience some of that lovely weather that's waiting just around the corner for us. So if we have a year like last year, we'll have a pretty good budget year. If we believe the farmer's almanac, well, then
we're screwed.
We may have to talk.
We're all screwed.
Is that your public comment?
I'm signing an annual contract.
Similar to when I presented the expenditure plan a while back, the areas that we're concerned with are with replacement costs for a variety of different employee groups, but I've flagged a couple here that supply teacher replacements as well as EA replacements. We are currently, we have more EAs in schools than we have like the allocation of replacement days for. So we have to cover that off from other areas of the budget. We also, again, with the heating fuel, natural gas, electricity, is pretty much weather dependent for the most part. However, there is a project that I had talked to you guys about before, the peak demand project, that is being rolled out in our district to sort of phase on when electrical systems come online. So they come on earlier and go off later, but overall it should reduce the cost to government and our district. And minor repairs as well sometimes can be an issue depending on what happens with our buildings. And as you know, some of our buildings are older than me. So.
Older than dirt, did you?
Yeah. They're some of them are you know, they're getting up there. So this is just a graphic to show you how the budget is split out across different buckets: information technology, student support, district operations, employee benefits, transportation, facilities, education support. And the largest block is in instruction, $937,930,000. So, District Education Council budget. As David had it in his report, typically we only report on this in June and again in January, but I thought it was timely where we're sort of at the beginning of the school year to show you where you're at. So we had determined that the budget would be $50,000 for District Education Council, and we've had $13,368 in expenses as of September the 30th. So we have a remaining balance of $36,631. Now the budget is aligned with pretty much what we had last year. We did increase it a little bit, depending on how many meetings that we have. If we run the normal schedule without additional meetings, and we may be under budget this year. So David mentioned about the capital improvement projects for 17-18. The list is fluid. Like, once we approve that list, there are a number of things when we approve that list that we don't really have at that moment, which is the roofing priorities from DTI, because they do their roof inspections over the summer. So once they completed the roofing assessment, there were three roofs that were identified that needed some work next summer. So those are on the top of our capital improvement list. There's also an elevator that requires a repair at Nashwalks, this middle school. And are certain types of elevators that had hydraulic lift that is below ground. So this retrofit moves them above ground. So, and it's a code change, really, is the requirement for this. It's a $50,000 project required to put on our list. And a number of projects, when we're working with a large budget, we usually average between $2.3 to $2.8 million in approved projects each year. So we have to try to prioritize things in there, and if there are large projects, say like a ventilation project for a school that's $750,000, we can't really put that all in there in a single year. So we will phase some of those things in over a couple of years. So we do ventilation in one wing, or do a section of schools with section of classrooms with sprinklers in case of Gesner, and do it in a couple of different phases. So those are the kind of changes that happen from the time DEC approves the list as a whole, and then some tweaking take place, and then in December, January, then when the announcements are made, we kind of have an idea of what our capital improvement total is, as well as which projects actually move forward for us for next summer's repairs. I just want to bring up doing that, David. I would ask a technician, but they're not here. Any techies in the room?
Why, what's doing what?
It's not showing what I have on my screen here. It's not showing here.
We like that better, doesn't it?
How do we know that's not what's on your screen? Yeah.
So, you have access.
Appendix A.
What is it, Sean? What is it?
Appendix A.
It's Appendix A. So it's the single page summary of the budget. It's broken down in a little bit more detail than what I presented in the PowerPoint. So it's the document that looks like this. So when David had in his report that we were basically 47.85% spent at this time, it's across those variety of buckets that I showed to you earlier. And like we have some deficits, like under instruction, education support services, but we have offsetting surpluses in school management and support programming, small deficit in facilities, small surplus in transportation, district office operations, and in benefits. So overall, we are balanced to zero at this point in time as of the second quarter. So. There's usually not a big change in our forecasting models between June and September. It's a pretty small window to really affect the bottom line of the district. So the next update will be as of November the 30th, and that's presented to the council in January. So we'll have a much better idea of where we're heading, but everything from what I've reviewed with Terry, it appears that we will have a balanced budget, which is what we're supposed to do. So, or have a surplus up to $100,000 is what the maximum that we're allowed to retain each year. So, are there any questions for me on my presentation?
Just on the information technology line, I guess you can go either way. Why are we so high now, or how do you go down to $100,000 before the end of the year?
Information technology.
Shows we spend
$52,000. Okay, I didn't quite hear
what. Oh, on the information technology line.
Yeah.
It shows year-to-date expenses of $552,000. Your forecast is a negative $200,000 to bring us to balance to zero. Just wondering what's causing.
Okay.
We're going to have to move money in.
Yeah. What that is there's still some journal entries that have to be done from the way that technology is structured with school districts is there's IT shared services. And what they did this year is they gave us their budget for staff and travel, and then they removed out the budget for it comes to us, and then they take it back. This is the last year that this is supposed to happen. So they've taken it back, and they have to move the travel, but from this line here, it appears that they've not taken all their expenses, because that line there should be at zero. And that's what is being reflected here. There's just some journal entries that haven't occurred yet to bring that out, because the only part of the budget that we keep is for IT repairs, infrastructure, and also programming for Brian Casey, our information technology subject coordinator, gets a budget, as well as level 2 techs get budgets as well for repair of computers and things. So we actually work with an operating budget of $348,000. So that's the window that I'm working with. I know it shows a little bit different there in the detail, but that's just some accounting that's going on in the background that we're expecting it to come to zero by the time those journal entries are done.
But you expect that to be cleaned up within third quarter?
Pardon me?
You expect that to be cleaned up within third
yes.
quarter?
Yes. Yeah. Good question.
It's a relief, Sean. I was afraid that we wouldn't have, without Dawn and John, we wouldn't have questions on the budget. Mark.
I'll do my best as well. So under total education support services, total school management support, I'm reading across, no, total school management and total programs.
Yeah.
The first one is a variance of $340,000, the other one's $466,000. And I know you had briefly mentioned it, but did you say specifically why there's so much extra, which...
Under school management support?
Yeah.
What that represents.
I'm not complaining.
But what that is, those are specific budgets that we don't spend to offset the areas that we know that we're going to be over in. So, for instance, under education, under that area, I'm just looking at the more detailed. Specifically under our talk with me salaries, the SLPs, we have a number of positions there that we haven't been able to fill. Like we have our complement, but we have additional funding there that is just sitting there that's not being spent. So we put that towards our deficit, and that would be the majority of it. There's also some under library assistant wages as well. That's a surplus. Now we use that particular line there to offset a deficit that we have, say, under school secretaries. We have more. We want to have more hours in school secretary than we have funding for, so we offset that as well.
Now, school management and support, is that where school secretaries fall?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, school secretary is under there. The SSE and talk with me, salary and expense, library assistant, wages are under there. Those are the big markers in that.
And what's under the total programs? Because that's...
Programs under there is the community schools programming. Youth Futures is the Youth Futures and Community Schools is the biggest contributor to that surplus that's there to offset other areas. Youth Futures is something that we have used for the past 5 years to offset needs in other areas of the budget. And the Community Schools Coordinator, we are funded above what we actually have out in the field. So.
So do we have plans to hire coordinators, or we're just going to...
We have, no, when we
when we amalgamated, we maintained the status quo. The community schools program is it's not falling away, but it's not
increasing.
It's not it's just sort of been.
But so what you're saying is there are community school coordinator positions that are being funded, but they're not being staffed.
Correct. Yeah, that money is being invested in other things.
Like what?
In covering off the other areas of the budgets that we have shortfalls in, EA replacement costs, substitute teacher replacement costs.
We're funded for 500 EAs and we're running at about 530 now.
Yeah, so we have to find those areas of where, yes, we're providing a service and we've been providing that steady service under community schools since we've amalgamated and came under Foam West. We did add in an operations person to look after community use of schools for all of our schools to support them. That's Linda Dempsey-Nicholson. She works in that role. That was one additional one that we added after we amalgamated. But the rest are there just as a resource for us to fund other areas within the budget. So when we have the pluses and minuses across the piece, we have to find those pluses, and if they're not a required output out there. Otherwise, if we didn't do that, then we'd be having a much different conversation here tonight about having a deficit budget at the second quarter and reflecting that. So we've optimized our resources to cover our bottom line, and that's been our practice.
On the capital improvement list, when you add roofs, because they're only done in the summer, let's say our bottom line, we're going to get $3 million from the department. We don't know we're going to get $3 million. When they add the roofs in, that $3 million has to cover those additional roofs.
Yes.
They're not giving us extra money. So the departments, or we, the districts, adding to the list, but we're not getting any additional funds. Whatever we were going to get, we were going to get. It's the same with emergencies, correct?
With the capital budget, they basically they have us prioritize our list like back in May,
right.
And then when they add these extra projects in after the summer, they come back to us and say these are priority roofs that DTI has flagged.
Right.
So they ask us to put those at the top of our list. The roofs that they have on there, you know, I wouldn't say they're huge roofing projects that are going to negatively impact the bottom line of our funding for us. But yes, we're asked to put them at the top and push everything else down. So there would be a number of projects that we would have thought were going to be in there that have dropped down below. They're still in the $3 million window because we really don't know whether we're going to get $2 million or $3 million. So they're still in that window. They're pushed down a little closer to the $3 million bottom line. And the ones that were just on the hinge have moved down a little further as well, below the $3
million. I had a question about the policy, but I can wait till.
I have a question, Sean.
Sure.
Sean. The speech language pathologist and the psychologist, is that out of this money that you guys play with?
We're all playing with.
Yeah.
Okay.
I know what you mean.
Okay.
They are funded obviously through a budget. They're through that particular bullet line there. We do have
which
open positions, I think, that we have one that the
psychologist.
The psychologist, we've tried three times to secure a psychologist, and we can't find one.
I think you need to pay them more.
We would be paying the
MBPP,
the designated amount as...
Because there are no psychologists?
I can't speak for why the psychologists aren't applying for or accepting
the
positions.
There's this whole stats thing.
Yeah.
So with the psychologists, I can tell you we transferred that funding directly into we kept it in education support services and guidance leads, I think it was, for that.
So the SLPs, we have all of the SLPs that came over to us when we got that group. We have the same number, but they came with extra budget that was never utilized. So we've kept the same level of funding, although it was a little bit reduced this year. They're still giving us, they see the need for us to have some flexibility within our budget, because if they baseline us on every single area of our budget, then that makes my job really, really difficult in order to present that, and they recognize that. So we need some flexibility within the budget in order to balance it. So we try to do that in accordance with the instructions that I get from David on the needs of education. We push that through and cost them all out and balance the bottom at the end of the day.
Sean?
Sorry, just on your facility line, I see you're spending about, you spent about $7.7 million in the first 6 months of the fiscal year. You're expected to spend $13.4 in the last half.
Yeah.
Why the spike? I assume there's some probably weather related, but that's...
Well, under facilities, that covers all of our custodial and maintenance repairman wages. So September to March is a longer period than April to, so it's 7 months versus five. So there'd be more salaries in there. There's about $4 million worth of salaries left to spend. $3.7 million electricity, because a lot of our schools are electrically heated. So once the heating season kicks in, our bills will start to flood in. As well as heating fuel. You know, we have $722,000 forecast to spend yet in heating fuel in the coming months. And the other one would be, we're about halfway with minor repairs. We spent just under $600,000 on minor repairs, and we have $670,000 forecasted to spend between now and the end of March, depending on need. Right, so we're doing regular preventative maintenance on our schools each month, as well as doing, you know, the work orders that custodians and principals identify, and as well as our own staff. Like today, I visited four schools in the northern part of our district, and there were a number of things, you know, that me and my staff noted that we need a work order for that, and just little things that having a fresh set of eyes that you see. So a number of things come about that way. So we're certainly on target to spend, I know the division of it's a little different, but it's the bulk of our spend is in the September to March area.
That would be the normal trend then.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Just a quick one. We've had the two new schools in Woodstock. So we've had a year longer to look at the pellet stove and how that's working. Are you finding that's lowered the cost, or is that being efficient? I'm thinking if we have other new schools that are built, is this something that is a trend?
It's compared to, like, budget-wise, they funded us last year at $151,000 for wood pellets, and we spent about $60,000 on wood pellets, but that system was not always online. So we have two backup boilers that are our oil boilers, right? So the cost transferred from that wood pellet over to the oil, right? So we haven't done a detailed analysis. I'm sure that DTI at some point will evaluate, you know, the effectiveness of them. Is it really a cost savings? There's certainly some benefits to wood pellet heating. It's unique that we have two of them. You know, the East has one, so they are certainly an option for schools, but I don't know if that trend will continue.
just had a question concerning the policy, so.
Okay.
So now's the time.
Thank you, Sean.
Thanks, Sean. Well done. Well done spending our money.
Yeah.
I got 36 grand left to travel.
So, Mark, you have a question for
David. Yeah. So, in GP6, which is our annual planning cycle appendix, it says that we will do the budgeting and forecast in October. And we had talked about this when we had changed our annual planning cycle. Is that the best date? And the only reason I ask is if it is, our policy says we would monitor in September, and now would be the time to change the monitoring if you guys feel that October is a better date.
Sean and I actually talked about this quite a bit, and we felt it was originally in September, and we felt moving it to October was a better date.
And going forward, it would continue
in
October.
That's right. And we reconfirmed that January, March, and June are the best dates for the other three. So we almost had it right. Just found that September was just too, didn't quite have enough.
Yeah, well, and the reports as of September 30th, and the meeting was before September 30th.
So Sean has responsibilities as mandated by the department to get reports in, and therefore September 30th and December 31st? No. When do you need to send your reports downtown?
So this one here, we sent a draft of this one ahead of tonight's meeting.
Right.
They'll want an approved version of this sent after this meeting, so there needs to be a...
Okay. Oh, well, I guess what I should be asking, it's as of what date? It's as of September 30th?
As of September 30th, as of November 30th.
November 30th.
And then they do one as of January 30th for the fourth quarter.
Yes.
And then that's basically it until we bottom line it and through the year and process.
Right. And then towards the end of April, we know how we did for the end of the fiscal year.
Yeah.
So... We now feel that the dates for these reports are lined up good, lined up well.
Would we need a motion to change the monitoring?
You did this. This was a part of the big motion.
Yeah, but that was only the planning cycle. Because remember we talked about as we go through the planning cycle, our individual policies have that effect, so we will have to look at it.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Right.
So okay.
That's part of GP6, but this is the actual EL4, because we haven't changed.
I understand completely what you're saying. Then, yes, I would agree that there should be a motion to change
EL4.
So what you're saying is by changing it in the planning cycle, doesn't change it policy by policy.
It doesn't change it policy by policy.
Okay.
You would have to change it as it comes up.
Well, that's good.
You don't have to amend the policies that
we're doing. Do you want to do that now? Or
like all at once or as we go each month?
As we go. Okay. Because you might discover the planning cycle may change. So if this is something that worked tonight, for example, like I would make a motion to change the monitoring from September to October for EL4.
I'll second that.
Moved by Mark and seconded by Sheila.
Question.
Does everybody understand what the motion is? Good. All in favor signify with aye.
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 Contrary minded, nay. Thank you. Carries.
If you'd like to.
Do we need a motion for that?
Yeah, we do for my report.
Yeah.
Before I go.
Are you in a hurry to get out of this?
No, I'm not.
You have your bag packed and everything.
It's bad. I'll go when you let me go.
You're hoping that we will... Could I have a motion to accept Sean's report?
I'm
moved sorry. By Wallace, seconded by Terry. Sean's report is accepted. All in favor of that... Are any questions further to what we've had?
No.
Sir, I just have a wording. What's a Oracle budget? Is that just supposed to be like an adjusted or
Oracle? Oracle is the accounting.
Okay, so
provincial accounting system.
Matrix.
Yeah.
Okay. Further. All in favor, signify with aye.
Aye.
Contrary minded, nay. Thank you. The motion is carried.
Thank you, Sean.
Good night.
Thank you.
Good night.
You're welcome to stay, Sean. But.
Sean lives upriver. So we'll send
drive carefully.
Is that moved by Mark?
Okay, it was moved by Wallace.
Thank you.
Actually, Mark's comments, are we ready for the next?
Yes.
Mark's comments really hold good weight for this next one, because in the planning cycle, we said the communication to council would actually be in November. But as we were going through it, and I realized after I had it prepared and sent out to you, the November, but really it was October that we meant, that I meant for it to be in. And so my hope is tonight, after you listen to my report, that you'll approve for it to be in October. And it's October now, so here we go. This is EL8, Communication to Council, and where it's the policy that calls for me to keep you well informed. Of course, we have our formal reporting practices for superintendent monitoring reports, that where I follow the planning cycle and where we make these monitoring reports public. Attend professional learning together, which is important. In fact, that will start tomorrow night on our way to Moncton, hosted by Stacy herself, and look forward to that professional learning opportunity on policy governance and monitoring, superintendent monitoring. We've agreed that our reports will be posted to the portal 3 days prior to our public meeting, so you have a chance to review them. Further communication with you and actually the organization is the introduction of district office staff and principals and vice principals through a formal memo. You'll see in Appendix B a sample of what that looks like. I take my responsibility of keeping you informed on relevant trends very seriously and try and keep you up to speed, mostly by email. And I know that with the addition of Jason, we'll even find improvements with that communication practice, including any heads up that that we want to make sure you're not caught off guard with any media coverage that might be pertaining specifically to Anglophone West. I talk a little bit about Jason in the report as the new director of communications. And then the last little bit talks about my responsibilities with respect to debt policy, how our communications occur through the email and portal and website and formal letters, how our relationship is supposed to be as a council as a whole and superintendent, although that doesn't mean that we can't speak one-on-one or I can't clarify any questions that you might have or that we can't talk about specific things. And I guess in closing I'll say that that I'm open to any advice on how you would like to see the reports shared. We've moved to this format and I've tweaked it a little bit this year from last year. I'm sure after this weekend we might even learn some more. We might even see some additional recommendations on how I should be reporting to you. But I'm certainly open to those changes. So you can see here a sample planning cycle. And I will ask for that motion that communication to council be an October report as opposed to a November report. And then this is a sample of what I send out to the organization when there are some changes within our staff at the leadership level. So that's my report on communication.
I see a question from Mark.
Bullet point, the second to last bullet point before the appendices, the first sentence. The superintendent will advise the council when, in his or her opinion, there is a lack of compliance with council policies on government process and council staff relations. I just want to say I think you're doing a great job with this policy. If there's one area I would like to see improvement, it would be at certain points in our deliberation and moving forward that you would say, that's not your job, that's mine. And I think this policy asks you to tell us that. Because I think sometimes in our zeal, we might overstep, and I think it's important for us to do our job well. I think it's important for us to not overstep.
Thank you.
I think you're doing a good job with the policy. But I sometimes we need to be told that. So.
Thank you.
That'd be very well
done. Well done, David. I'll make a motion to change it.
From November to October.
Sure. Anybody want to say?
Sheila
has moved that we move this report officially from November to October.
Do
I have a secondary? Sean? Seconded by Sean.
Just for clarity, that you're changing the monitoring date in policy EL8?
Yes.
And to change it in the planning cycle as well?
Yes. Which is already on paper.
I wouldn't do it in that because it's already in the planning cycle. And we already made a motion to accept it.
Yeah, actually your motion was for it to be in November on the planning cycle.
Oh, so you made, okay. Yeah, yes. That's a good thing, yeah.
You missed that slide.
I took a liberty and put it all together after I had told you EL8 was coming. My bad.
Whatever you prefer, no.
Okay, you've heard the motion. Are there any further questions? Seeing none, all in favor signify with aye.
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 Contrary-minded, nay. Your motion is carried. And thank you for those reports. Moving on to correspondence, you see the correspondence as it is there. Do we have anything to add on the third one at this time?
Nothing to add on the third one. I had a question from it, a public question actually about it, and it's with respect to the minister's appointment of a DEC representative to represent the First Nations community within Anglophone West. And as per our process, we've communicated with leadership within our six communities, the chiefs of each First Nation, received some feedback, shared that with the minister, and we'll watch for a word from the minister when he's prepared to make an appointment.
Yes, Mark.
I just had a question on correspondence from FHS.
Right. Now that item is on the portal. I'm not sure if it was in our last meeting, but it is there now. It's the it's a letter that was written to the minister regarding Stephanie D. Are you familiar with this? Would you rather speak to this than me?
Okay, I haven't read the letter yet, but what I'm understanding is that they would like to be able to serve tea and coffee, that they're getting a lot of movement up from the school to local coffee shops and things like that. To me, it doesn't, okay, it's just me, but I don't think it's a big deal. I drank tea when I was in high school. I didn't stunt my growth. But I don't know. I mean, it is district policy. I guess it should be discussed.
And I read the letter. I guess the question I had was, I guess I never realized tea and coffee couldn't be sold with policy 7-Eleven. So I guess that is the fact. And the question is, or the statement is, that seems a little ridiculous. And why wouldn't we? I know there's things we can't, but tea and coffee, maybe coffee. I mean, Tim Hortons coffee shouldn't be sold to anyone at any time. But certainly, you know, something like tea, for example. I do apologize for my coffee drinking colleagues that may have Tim Hortons with them, but you know.
I think it's the problem.
And the point was made
in
the meetings that you know, at Coles St. Anne they do serve it, but they are considered a community center, right, as opposed to FHS wouldn't be.
Sheila has a comment.
Yes. Sorry.
I think it's an issue of carrying it up and down the hallways with it being hot. I think it's a safety. I've heard that, and well, I've that, also that heard that teachers should not be seen carrying coffee through the
hallway. That would be something. Yes, people look at me, is that, and it comes back to policy 7.
Have you heard
7.
That?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Policy 711 says that schools should not be serving food or drink that is of minimal nutritional value. And coffee and tea falls under the category of minimal nutritional value. It also says that the adults in our organization should be serving as positive role models.
Exactly.
So my call to the organization is that if children aren't, if the students in our schools are supposed to be, are not supposed to be consuming items of minimum nutritional value while in school,
like water.
then the adults in the building shouldn't be promoting it or
walking around with
so I'm not, and we have to be careful that nobody interprets that as the superintendent says I can't drink coffee. But what I'm saying is it would be my preference so that you're not modeling those choices, that you have your coffee in a coffee cup.
What
or
about
that you
iced,
drink water.
An iced green tea? It wouldn't be hot or so, I think.
That would just be gross to drink, so don't bother.
But really, have there been cases of anyone spilling hot?
Yes, there has.
There were cases.
Well, there was on Seinfeld. Kramer.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah. The Seinfeld episode.
There has been a case that, a poor case that dealt in, and that's all I can say.
So originally the Fredericton High, BSSC, sent their letter to the BDEC. It was determined to not be something that we need to spend our time discussing. and you may understand why now. So because there was no response to that, they have sent a message to the minister and I actually copied as well the message they sent to us last year. And so it's between them and the minister, I think, at this point.
Is there any talks potentially at the provincial level on 7-Eleven and perhaps revamping that?
It's not on on the radar of the deck chairs right now.
Did the schools who serve McDonald's hamburgers as hot lunch, did they apply to 7-Eleven for an exemption?
I'm not aware of school. Oh,
that's real beef.
Are you talking about Moncton or are you talking about us?
No, I'm talking about us.
Yeah, I know that there have been cases where arrangements have been made with a fast food company and the purchase has met the requirements of policy 711.
I'd like to see that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a field trip for you.
All right.
Does that answer your question, Mark, about that correspondence?
Sure.
I have one item that I've added to the agenda on correspondence, and it is a request from the Department of Education and Early Childhood Development, who are looking for a District Education Council representative to sit on the appeal board on teacher certification. The board's mandate is to review the certification status of teachers whose certificates have been revoked or suspended by the Minister of Education and Early Childhood Development. So they're looking for three DEC representatives and one from this DEC this year. And the appointments are made by the Lieutenant Governor and for a three-year term. I believe I have someone interested in serving. Terry Pond is interested. Is there anyone else interested in serving? Sean? Anyone else?
And are we going to submit all the names, or we were only asked to submit one?
We are asked to submit one. A recommended counselor. We could submit two and not recommend one of them. A recommended counselor, one name. So moving forward, would you like to vote on the two individuals?
I think
that would be the
appropriate.
appropriate way.
Probably should be done by ballot.
While Carol looks after that, maybe we could move on to public comments if we have any. He's just that smile that won't come off his face.
Can't
he
stop
can't
smiling.
Talk.
2 years following you guys around, being here in Woodstock. Probably some new people here that don't know who I am. So, Darren McKenzie, I'm Deputy Mayor of Hanwell. I've been involved with you guys and talking. I sat on the committee with Mark and Terry and other people that looked through the whole project for Hanwell in the first place. And I wanted to first thank Mark and Stephanie tonight for initiating the motion. And thanks to the entire deck for approving the amended motion. Thank you very much. It's just great, and I think the community will probably be very welcome to this. Government might not do anything with it, but you know, it's put it on the radar at least, so see what happens next. And as a personal side note too, nothing to do with that, I just want to thank Jane for her motion tonight, because I think a lot of people in the district would appreciate that too, that that's being treated like a political football and being bounced around, and it shouldn't really be. So, for the entry point,
thank you. Thank you. Any other? That's it.
It's always just me.
I just want you to know that you should continue following us around, because you know that we don't have a big following.
I can be the groupie.
Yeah.
T-shirt. You are the groupie. T-shirt. But you can't come to Moncton.
Oh, no.
We're receiving ballots, and we will write on the ballot either Sean Winslow or Terry Pond is your choice.
Could
to represent.
Just write the first name?
Sean or Terry, yes, that would be fine.
Sean, S-H-A-U-N? Or S-E-A-N?
S-E-A-N, yes. We would take the other spelling.
And Terry is T-R-I or Y?
Y.
What did you say?
As in the
Bob,
Terry? Pardon
me?
Can we vote twice?
No, I'm going to make sure this is
yeah.
The one.
Exactly.
You should know you're a chef. Yeah, that's your chance. Free candy night for today.
The French question that we had a little bit earlier this evening,
yes.
I was reminded that there is a different level of proficiency as a target for late immersion and early immersion. So any results would be reflective of the target that that particular program is supposed to reach. She wants me to do it.
Oh, Rick, listen to that. This gives you something to do anyway for your whole 2 hours. Yeah.
You'll make the minutes.
Count them twice, Rick.
I will remind you that, unusual as it is, we have an information session planned for next Thursday here again. So.
Oh, we do?
Yeah.
We do.
Yeah.
Aren't we
yeah.
in this thing all day? This. Student
for the
and
day.
Then you're here for
this
the
is
day.
Evening.
Can you say that announcement again? So
our information
things.
Session for November
yeah.
is next Thursday. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here.
No,
here.
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 And what time?
6:30.
Sorry.
No, sorry. 5:30.
6:30
yeah. for
supper. 6 o'clock to eat.
5:30 to eat. We'd hate for you to get here in the food.
It's an information.
It will because I'll be late because I work till 6. But
it's
I
an information in. Session, so
yeah, yeah, I'll be here. If I'm a few minutes late, you'll know that.
Okay, and the our representative on the teacher certification yeah. appeal board is Terry Pound. Whose initials are TP. Sorry, Heather. It's getting to the end of the evening. Do you remember what your question
was? Okay. The information session, sorry about the catch, Leo Hayes catchment, there's one at KV coming up and then one at Leo Hayes. So is that discussing, just giving people the same
repeat,
thing?
Yes.
Okay.
There'll
okay.
be a couple slight improvements that we noted from the first one, but same. It's the same story.
Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering,
yeah.
like, as
one of the
should
things,
I be going to all, well, I can't go to all three because I already missed one, but.
That's right. It'd be good to go to one.
Yeah, no, I was, but in my thought, I was wondering, do I want to drive to KV or do I want to drive to
The KV, I expect there will be members of the public who are concerned about the shift to Nakawag.
Right.
But
the there's
Leo
always,
will be
a
mixture.
That's what I thought, but there's quite often been students from KV going to Nakawag anyway. Then the, I'm just looking down the road just so I understand, the MLA DEC Invitational Supper?
Yes.
Does everybody else know about
the
more 15th. About this than I do?
The 15th. The DEC
oh,
is...
Okay.
We
eat supper and then we play football against the MLAs that show up.
I love Kennedy.
Really?
Yes.
So that'll tell me how I should dress, change.
Bring a red and a blue scarf.
We're starting to hear from MLAs who've been invited and there will be some that are... here joining us, so that's good news.
Okay.
And then we're back here on the 24th?
Correct.
Woodstock on the 24th. We switched those
that's not on that?
Yeah, that's on this.
It's one. On that.
Yeah. What's it say?
November 24th is the public meeting at Woodstock Education Center.
Okay.
And you might have to leave work a little bit earlier than...
But we carpool Dave from here, so.
Sorry, I'm sizing to a van for our stress.
I see nothing further on the agenda. Do I have a motion for it?
Well, first, do we have a motion to destroy the ballots?
Oh, yes. Could I have a motion to destroy the ballots for the representative on the...
Yeah.
Moved by Jane and seconded by. I don't think we have to vote on that, do we? No.
To destroy them.
No. Okay. And motion for adjournment, then?
I have one question.
Oh.
David, I would like to know how many psychologists we have right now in the West?
5.8. I'm going from memory.
5.8,
but if you want to wait, I'll check my sheet.
Maybe you could email me that.
Take me 5 seconds to...
5.8 for how many kids in the West?
23,000.
Okay. Could I now have a motion for adjournment, please?
Let's adjourn.
Thank you, Wallace.